I'm John Kroll. Today on No Limits, we're going to talk about Earshot, a musical composer competition of next-gen talent that involves fierce competition, a panel of mentor judges, and a live audience. We'll hear how Earshot got started and what it involves. My guests are both from the Indianapolis Chamber Orchestra, Executive Director Elaine Eckhart and Maestro Matthew Kramer. Please join the conversation. Call 866-476-3881. Email is nolimitswfyi.org. Facebook is nolimitswfyi. Twitter is WFYI. Now, this news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. Today on No Limits, we're going to be talking about Earshot. That's a musical composer competition of next-gen talent involving fierce competitions, a panel of mentor judges, and a live audience. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimitswfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at WFYI. My guests are Elaine Eckhart, who is the executive director of the Indianapolis Chamber Orchestra, and Maestro Matthew Kramer, also of the Indianapolis Chamber Orchestra. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
Pleasure to be here.
Feel positively musical having you, the two of you here. So let's start by talking a little bit about what Earshot is and how it works, because, you know, we're trying to encapsulate it, and I'm sure almost everyone out there is wondering, okay, how do they do that? How do they make it work? Elaine, you want to get us started, and then Matthew, we'll let you chime in.
Yeah, I'll get us started, and Matthew really he's experienced this. This is a new experience for me. Earshot is it's a workshopping of new orchestral material, and I think this concept of workshopping is commonly, you know, understood or well known in the theater world, but it also exists in the orchestral world. Composers don't usually have an orchestra at their fingertip, especially young composers. So it's very hard to know what you're writing, how it all fits together, and what it's going to sound like. So Earshot is a project of many organizations who have as part of their mission advancing American classical music and helping emergent composers get their work published, have them, you know, write effectively. And so then the process, I'll let Matthew talk about.
Okay. I think that's your cue, Matthew.
Absolutely. And this is, as Elaine mentioned, Earshot is a product of many different organizations working together. The American Composers Orchestra in New York City with a mission, and it has been since its inception, of promoting living American composers' works, actually created this. And it is the Earshot format has traveled to many different orchestras, phenomenal orchestras, the Seattle Symphony, New York Philharmonic, Nashville Symphony. There's even a jazz composers' workshop for Earshot. But the Indianapolis Chamber Orchestra has the distinction of being the first chamber orchestra to participate in this. And what makes this this project so fascinating is it really does begin with a national call for submissions from composers all around the country in various degrees of their studies or professional activities. We have some composers who are finishing doctorates, some composers who submit that are on faculty at universities. And so it really is the promotion of the next generation of great composers, we find, because we'll get as many as 300 applications for one reading. And through a select committee of whittling down to about 20, 25 composers, where I'll go through those along with a few other panelists, and we'll select 4 to 5 winners and past readings. In this case, in Indianapolis, we do have five composers who have been selected here. And the scores are judged on various criteria, from just the musical structure, technique, inspiration, and also the candidate's own diverse profile as well. We want to really our composers to represent what classical music should be, which is a very diverse group of individuals. So we believe that we have five outstanding individuals who will join us here.
And you say you've participated in one of these before?
Three, actually.
Three?
In the past.
Okay. Where?
When I was the associate conductor of the Buffalo Philharmonic. The Buffalo Philharmonic was one of the rare exceptions of orchestras that had been Earshot had returned to for successive years. So I was able to do two classical Earshot readings and one jazz composer Earshot readings with the orchestra.
So walk me through how it works, because are these completed works? When I hear panel of mentor judges, that also suggests that some revision is possible. And I've got to say is that admittedly in a different form, a writer myself, the idea of showing my rough drafts to a live audience is not appealing to me.
These are finished and polished works, but the idea being, much like a workshop format, as Elaine had mentioned, in writers' workshops or theater, is that the composers arrive knowing that their work will be scrutinized, and that more than likely through the advice of the musicians in the orchestra or the mentor composers, they're open to this kind of feedback and willing to make corrections or amendments or alterations through it. And that's really what the focus of the workshop is. And so we have those two sessions with the orchestra that are really the centerpiece of the all of the 2 days of activities. The first is just the opportunity for the orchestra to run through and for the composers to hear their works performed by a professional orchestra, to take notes. Then we have feedback sessions from the mentor composers and the musicians offering their input. And it could be anything from, large structural concerns, or it could be something about the first bassoon part that's sitting in a register that's not, the most friendly to the bassoonist. And we come back the next day and polish up a few things, but that's really the public concert. We call it a reading because it is much less formal. The musicians aren't in their tuxedos. We don't, take our bows and, applause and all that. That's a welcome, but the idea really is just to have, after we polish a few details, a full run-through with the orchestra so that these five composers walk away with a professional quality recording of their work that they can use for grant writing or for publication in the future.
Is that ultimately the incentive for the composers to participate? Are there awards that are associated with the competition?
Well, the workshop itself is very much an incentive because just who you meet, for example, the publicity, that be able to have that on your resume that you were selected through a highly competitive process. Yes, but we've, unlike past Earshot readings, have turned this into a competition, frankly. The ICO has always had an annual composer competition. By partnering with the American Composers Orchestra and the League of American Orchestras, we've opened up the talent pool. And out of these five composers that visit Indianapolis, we'll have one winner. And that'll be decided by the musicians, the audience there who will vote, and the mentor composers and myself ultimately.
Okay, and what will the winner receive?
An additional performance by the Chamber Orchestra at Indiana State University's Contemporary Music Festival, which is celebrating its 50th anniversary.
Okay, so it's as is so often the case in life, the reward for doing good work is that you get to do more work.
Absolutely.
But I think every composer wants their music to be played.
Yeah.
So that's a big reward. And that Contemporary Music Festival at Indiana State is at the end of October. So it's very timely. And this would give that winning composer, if there is any polishing or further editing to do, time to do that.
So the public piece of this, the part that people can attend and hear, and will they hear the work of all five of the composers during one? I know we're not calling it a performance reading. Will they hear that in one sitting, shall we say?
Absolutely. That's the part that is very much like a concert. All five pieces will be performed from beginning to end. The composers will be there at the start of their respective piece to introduce it, to give a brief explanation of the piece and what it's about, and then we play their piece.
Okay. And if people do want to attend, when is it, where is it, and is there a cost?
There is not a cost. It's free.
Okay.
And the concert, the Earshot Reading Concert, is on Friday, September 23rd, at 7 p.m. at the Schrott Center, which is part of the Butler Arts Center. It's on the campus of Butler University.
And do people, they just show up or do they need to reserve? Would you recommend reserving seats?
We would love to. We're trying to, have an idea of how the house will fill. So we would really welcome a phone call to reserve a seat. It's not necessary. So if someone were to decide at the last minute, I can do this, then we probably would generate just a ticket for counting purposes when they come to the door, right, an at door with a $0. So it's fine. They can call the ICO office, which is 317-940-9607, to reserve a ticket.
Go ahead and give them that number again.
Okay, so that's 317-940-9607, or they can come to the Schrott shortly before 7 p.m. and we'll accommodate them.
And is there a way, since we now live in a digital age, for people to reserve a spot online? Or
we have the information online, but since it's a zero ticket and we're not generating a ticket, it would be better for a phone call.
Yeah, that sort of discourages PayPal and all those.
Yeah, it's so. So in this case, we do have a website, and you can order our regular tickets online. But in this case, it would be better to call.
If you are just joining us, we are talking about Earshot. It's an innovative musical composer competition that will be coming up on the campus of Butler University in roughly 2 weeks.
Roughly, yes.
If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at NoLimitsWFYI or on Twitter at WFYI. So how did Earshot get started as a concept? How long is it? Because it sounds like it's almost an interactive way to approach the idea of composing.
Very much so. And it did begin with the American Composers Orchestra. And I think initially it was called the Underwood Readings, and the American Composers Orchestra would do those readings. And they very quickly realized that they had the capacity to provide much more potential readings if they just partnered with major orchestras. And so that's what began about, I'd say, a little over a decade ago. And as I mentioned earlier, their partner orchestras are some of the finest in the country. Again, the Seattle Symphony, New York Philharmonic, Columbus, Ohio Symphony, et cetera, et cetera. So that they do about two readings a year with these different orchestras. And there are many different partners involved with this. The League of American Orchestras is one of the parent organizations, and their president will be here actually in Indianapolis to give one of the many different seminar classes that we have going on in addition to the two orchestra readings that we have here. So the whole point of doing this, honestly, was to provide an opportunity for the next generation of composers to have access to great orchestras to play their music, as opposed to, a student orchestra at a university, which might not be able to realize their score to the greatest possibility.
And what is required for the chamber orchestra, in terms of hosting this or implementing it? What challenges are associated with that? We can talk about, how about, Elaine, I'll throw the, what challenges are associated logistically with that, and then I will throw the musically one.
Well, we have about a dozen people coming to Indianapolis. The five participating composers, those whose works have been selected to be read. We have three mentor composers. One of the mentor composers is local, Michael Shelley, who is on the faculty of Butler University at the Jordan College of Arts. And I'll just take this opportunity to say that Jordan College of Arts is a partner with us on this project. I mean, we are working together with them. And then we have these seminar participants. So we've got food, transportation, and housing logistics for these, as well as just venue logistics, although most everything is going to be happening at the Schrott, including the seminars. So the venue logistics are somewhat simple.
Matthew, How about the musical challenges of getting, I'm assuming, getting to know all these pieces, among other things?
Well, of course, everything is happening very quickly here. The music is coming in. Composers are they're still making a few alterations up until the last minute, but all the parts have arrived. They're being bowed, which means that for the string players, all of the markings have to be in the parts before they're sent out to our musicians. And the musicians have five fairly challenging pieces that they have to learn in a relatively short period of time. So, but that's all part of the interactive process of these readings. Is I think very exciting for the musicians to be involved so intricately here in providing feedback to the composers and playing fresh new works of music.
Do they look forward to it? Do the musicians?
Think so. Absolutely. We play Beethoven.
Definitely.
We play Mozart all of the time. And it's beautiful music. It's 200 years old. Here's something that is fresh, new, and a very interactive, again, experience for all of us.
If you are just joining us, we are talking about Earshot, an innovative new musical composer competition on No Limits. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI or on Twitter at WFYI. My guests are Elena Eckhart and Matthew Kramer, the executive director and maestro of the Indianapolis Chamber Orchestra. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking today about an innovative musical composer competition called Earshot that is going to be taking place at Butler University on September 23rd. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI or on Twitter at WFYI. You also can do what a listener named Richard has done and send us an email. You'll find us at nolimits@wfyi.org. Richard is going to be posing this question to my guests, Elaine Eckhart and Maestro Matthew Kramer. They are both with the Indianapolis Chamber Orchestra. Elaine is the executive director. And they ask, what should you do, if anything, if this is your first time going to an orchestra? So if someone is out there and listening to this and hasn't had the classical music experience before, hasn't been to an orchestra performance, what are sort of the expectations of decorum and really, what kind of experience should an audience member expect? Matthew, I'll throw that one to you first.
I love that question, and it's a question that we're actually looking at, I think, in greater terms in the industry. What does the future of classical music look like, and how do we bring in a diverse audience and attract people who really don't know or are unaware of whether they might like classical music? The first thing I would say is come in with an open mind. And don't worry about not knowing what's going to happen. I think that's part of the excitement of it. We are often seen as a very stuffy form of art, meaning that you must come dressed up and you have to clap when you're supposed to clap. And what we are really, I think, trying to encourage with all of our concerts, anywhere with classical music, is just to enjoy it for with an open mind, not worrying about those kinds of things. Of course, when the concert is, show up. And in most cases, for all of our subscription concerts, we have pre-concert lectures beforehand. If you're interested in finding out a little bit more about classical concerts, you can show up an hour ahead of time and just hear, if I'm on the podium, hear my thoughts about the pieces concerned, or if just show up and have a drink before the concert and sit down and, absolutely, and just let the music wash over you. I always compare music and art in terms with food as well. I mean, I love food, and there are a lot of things that are cooked perfectly, but it might not be my cup of tea. And then all of a sudden, the next entree comes out, and it's perfect, just the way I like it. The same might be true for music. The first piece on the program, maybe it's not necessarily your cup of tea, but the next tune comes along, and it's fantastic. So for anybody who's walking into a concert for the first time, I think that that's exhilarating. You're there for a reason. Something piqued your curiosity. Just come in and just let the music wash over you. And if you're curious, there are ways that you can explore even more about music.
How did classical music get that reputation for stuffiness? Because, when you think about it, it is music that is filled with passion. I mean, it's the sweep of it is almost the width and breadth of a continent. And there's tremendous emotional depth. If you look at the lives of the composers, really modern rock stars have nothing to teach them about, stretching boundaries and bad behavior and all of that.
You're absolutely right about that, John.
I mean, so how did we get to the point where it is sort of considered, the equivalent of watching paint dry or whatever. Yeah, I don't mean to be disrespectful,
right.
Because I love listening, and I actually enjoy the performance aspects.
You're absolutely right. It really is a product of the mid to late 19th century, early 20th century, where musicians adopted tuxedos and, the concertmaster comes out and bows and the conductor and shake hands and we play, and then you can't clap between movements of a symphony. That's not proper etiquette. In Beethoven's time, there would be encores between movements where somebody would play the keyboard upside down there'd be fire eaters.
I mean, Chuck frankly, Berry of their time.
Yes, yeah. It was much more of a carnival atmosphere in many respects. I mean, of course, before that you had kings and queens and dukes that had their little royal orchestras, so there's always been an amount of formality in tradition with classical music. But, we're, as I mentioned earlier, exploring more and more ways of changing the concert format. One thing that we're doing for our opening night concert on October 8th is we're just moving the start time up to 5 o'clock. We tried that last season, and what that allows is that you're in the concert in the late afternoon, and you're out right at dinner time. So you can go and have dinner. You're not getting home at 10:30 at night. So from everything from the starting time to the lengths of concerts, the kind of music that we play, to post-concert receptions, pre-concert receptions, we're really exploring opportunities of what these concerts look like going forward.
Is that a challenge for you, Elaine? I mean, attempting to combat that the perception Matthew has talked about here, that it's considered somewhat stuffy, to pull people in so that they are willing to give the chamber orchestra and really this incredible form of art and human communication the chance it deserves.
It is a challenge, although I think the chamber orchestra has a little bit of advantage, any chamber orchestra, when compared to maybe a larger symphonic orchestra. Chamber orchestras, and particularly the Indianapolis Chamber Orchestra, play often in more intimate spaces. We're a smaller ensemble. We're a roster of 34 musicians at any one time. There's probably somewhere between 28 and 40 musicians on the stage instead of 80. And we, we say that we're the small orchestra that plays in the small hall. Mm-hmm. The Schrott Center seats about 450. So our tagline, our brand, if you will, is Intimate Classic Original, Indianapolis Chamber Orchestra, ICO, Intimate Classic Original, playing off of the acronym. And I do really think that chamber orchestras are able to create an environment of intimacy very easily, from the size of the venue to the sound that comes with having fewer musicians on the stage. And then we have a regular, when we're at the Schrott, we have a regular post-concert reception that's sponsored by our wonderful friends at Indianapolis Fruit. They're going to be doing this for the 11th year in a row, where you can meet, talk to the other audience members. You can meet the maestro. You can meet the guest artist. You can talk with the musicians. And it really personalizes it. Now, all of a sudden, those aren't just musicians on the stage, but they've come out in the lobby, and I got to talk to the guest artist or the one of the string players about what that violin riff was like. So it is a challenge, because anytime you're combating a stereotype,
which is what you're doing,
and that's what we're doing, that's a challenge. But I think we have some elements about being a chamber orchestra that make it a little more easy to overcome than a larger symphonic ensemble. And we can do that also with Matthew is helping us do that in our programming. You asked about that. Where did that stodginess come from? And I think it really comes from that imperial attitude, the kings and the queens. Mozart was played in a lot of Austrian palaces. Mm-hmm. So there was a certain societal element that I think Americans maybe 50, 100 years ago wanted to emulate. Mm-hmm. And now we don't desire to emulate that so much, but the music is still wonderful. So I think that's a little bit where it comes from. One of the ways we can also help, whatever I want to say, negate that or offset it, mm-hmm. is not just playing music that came from, yeah. you know, 18th century Europe. And I think if you look at the programming throughout what Matthews programmed for the 16-17 season, you're going to see a tremendous amount of variety across all four musical periods. There's a body of literature that spans four centuries, and that is what is amazing. That is a lot of music to choose from.
And given that Earshot is sort of the hook for our conversation, but really we're talking about, at some level, the state of classical music right now, and in a larger sense, what defines classical music? Because I think the popular perception out there is it's just a piece of music that's really, really old. When in fact, there is much more that goes into it than that. Matthew.
And I think that those walls are breaking down all over the place. But what defines classical music? It's art music. And again, composers who are writing now for orchestras and different solo instruments are combining different mediums. And this is mm-hmm. nothing new. I mean, think about the scandal that was caused by George Gershwin's Rhapsody in Blue. I mean, how dare somebody bring the sounds of the dance hall into a concert hall? Mm-hmm. And now 100 years later, well, plenty of composers have combined jazz and mm-hmm. classical music. But now there are composers who are combining rock music, techno music. I mean, I've done several pieces that call for a DJ and symphony orchestra that are fascinating. And this is still art music. So, you know, we think of the standard song on the radio. They're all, you know, they follow the same format. 3 minutes, usually. There's an A section, you know, there's mm-hmm. a bridge, and, you know, the formula with the chorus. And with art music, well, obviously, it's much more complicated than that. But it doesn't make it inaccessible. For example, on our season in January, we're performing a cello concerto that's in the style of a tango. And this was nominated for a Latin Grammy Award. It's a fascinating piece that sounds like Argentinian tango. And it's completely accessible for the audience. It's won rave reviews. It's being performed everywhere. And it's classical music. So it does not have to be a symphony. Does not have to be a piano concerto. Classical music can really encompass a great deal of styles and formats.
If you are just joining us, we are talking about Earshot. It's an innovative musical composer competition that's going to be at Butler University on September 23rd. Really, we're talking about classical music and how it deserves a wider audience than it sometimes receives and a wider perception of interest. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at WFYI. So talk to me about these five composers who are going to be coming, why they were selected, and really what they're doing, because I'm maybe not the smartest guy in the world, but I think I've figured out that really what you're looking for here are artists who are willing to stretch some boundaries and take the form in new directions. So talk to me a little bit about what the ways each of these five push the envelope a little bit.
Well, as I mentioned earlier in the interview, I received about 20 scorers that had made it to the semifinals. And then along with Robert Beezer, who's the artistic director of the Composer's Orchestra, artistic director Laurette, rather, we whittled it down to about six composers. You know, one defining thing, obviously, was who was available for that date. Unfortunately, some composers had received other projects that they had to that took their schedule away. But luckily, we got the five composers that we had both agreed on unanimously. We did, of course, want diversity, not only mm-hmm. In their works, but in their backgrounds and their, you know, the different stages mm-hmm. of their career development. One of our composers, Karina Ingram, actually writes video game music. which is another form of talking about what is classical music, another form of burgeoning possibilities for it. And it's a huge industry, honestly. And she has been trained as a classical composer, obviously. Another one of our composers, Aaron Severini, actually studied dance at the American Ballet School, but he also studied composition at Juilliard, which is obviously one of our most prestigious conservatories. And his piece had already been played before, but he was thinking about revising it from a large orchestra to a small orchestra and was thrilled to have been chosen. Ronaldo Moya and Jessica Rudman as well is a phenomenal female composer. David Jones wrote a piece called Aspen, which is a musical description of aspen trees blowing in the wind. It's about a 7-minute tone poem, really, of very fascinating different effects. So,
so is a sense of like interconnectedness because the aspen trees are all connected and.
Exactly. It's been
So did I ruin the surprise for the audience here?
You helped the interpretation. It'll help someone.
Yeah, you'd be very
understand.
You'd be fascinated by this piece and how an orchestra can produce colors like this, not things like scales or arpeggios, but by the different effects of percussion instruments and strings creating different sounds on their instruments can create really this fascinating world in sound.
Okay, and those are the five?
Those are the five.
Now, how do you select the mentor panel of judges?
That's done in conjunction with the American Composers Orchestra. As Elaine mentioned earlier, Michael Shelley, who's on faculty at the Butler University, is one of our mentor composers because Butler is our a partner in this. And Michael is a wonderful composer. And Melinda Wagner, a Pulitzer Prize-winning composer, has been a mentor composer on many occasions for Earshot. And Robert Beeser, who is the artistic director laureate of the American Composers Orchestra, has always been involved with these readings in some capacity or another. So it was very easy to decide who was going to be here and who's very highly regarded, not only for their pedagogical methods, but also for their knowledge of the industry and composition.
So, and what role do they play? I mean, what will they be doing? What kind of feedback do they offer? And how do they offer it? I mean, is that something the audience is going to hear?
These sessions that we have during the day are very much open for people who are interested in knowing more about these discussions that we'll have. But, you know, really the thing is that we start before the rehearsals with the orchestra, just going through their piece, myself included, what are the composer's intentions at this point? You know, how fast do you want this? And is this what you wanted here? And then we just start more of the feedback. And really, I'll say from my experience with these readings that the mentor composers really, it's not constructive criticism in the way like this is wrong or you need to do it this way. It's more about talk to me what you were thinking when you went through this. And, you know, it's really much more of a fluid conversation as opposed to what's right and wrong. Because when you're composing, there really are no right and wrong rules anymore.
Yeah.
I mean, all the rules of Beethoven and Mozart were essentially thrown out the window when Debussy came along and rewrote harmony, for example, in the 20th century. So composers have been breaking rules ever since, trying to explore what new sound possibilities can exist. So.
And how much of it has changed? Like, I know, you know, the whole definition of what one considered a great singer or whatever was changed by this device I'm just speaking into right now, that instead of being able to fill an entire hall with the sound of your voice, subtleties of intonation and all of that became much more important with the advent of the microphone. What has technology done to the development of musical forms?
Oh, it's blown open the doors, frankly, from everything from musical instruments, electronic instruments, to using computers to generate sounds. Sometimes composers bring computers into the orchestra, as I mentioned earlier with this techno piece that I was, you know, conducting. So technology has really not only changed how music is written in classical industry, but also concert formats as well. I was just talking about this earlier, that now you have movies with live orchestral accompaniment. You have audio and visual elements incorporated into the concert hall. So it's a constantly evolving art form, just like every art form is. And the new breakthroughs, the new advances that we make open up new possibilities that 10 years earlier were unthought of.
Elaine, what's the motivation for the Indianapolis Chamber Orchestra to hold a competition like this? What does the organization get out of this?
Well, within the industry, we will definitely get national recognition. There'll be an article about this in the Symphony Magazine. Within the city, it will bring recognition to Indianapolis, to the Indianapolis Chamber Orchestra, and to Butler University and Jordan College of Arts. But the other part that's the hardest to measure is the excitement that comes with being a part of the creative process that's keeping the genre alive. And I really cannot quantify it, but for me, that is the most exciting part of it.
If you are just joining us, we're talking about Earshot, which is a musical composer competition of next generation talent that's going to be taking place at Butler University. We're really talking about classical music, though, and its evolution. My guests are Elaine Eckhart and Maestro Matthew Kramer of the Indianapolis Chamber Orchestra. Elaine is the executive director. I am John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking about Earshot. It's a musical composer competition of next-gen talent that, well, even now, I know it's more elevated than that, but it is sort of like taking, I realize I'm going to anger someone by saying this, but a much more artistically challenging America's Got Talent or The Voice or American Idol idea with live interactive feedback between the composer and some judges and the audience. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI or on Twitter at WFYI. My guests are Elaine Eckhart. She's the executive director of the Indianapolis Chamber Orchestra, and Maestro Matthew Kramer of the Indianapolis Chamber Orchestra. So I wanted to ask, and I'm going to throw this one at Matthew since you've taken part in these before. What are the dynamics with these composers when they all arrive in town? Because, art is art, and we're all, in theory, committed to the same thing. On the other hand, only five of these folks come to compete, and only one of them gets the prize, human nature being what it is. I suspect that in addition to focusing on their pieces, they're looking out the corners of their eyes at the other folks as well.
We've tried to make the focus of Earshot about that the workshop environment of focusing on your piece, to having the orchestra play it, to receiving feedback about that, and it just happens to be that when one of them leaves, they'll leave with the knowledge that their piece will be performed again at a very prestigious new music festival at Indiana State. So I'm sure that there's a competitive element in every one of these composers. There always is. It's a very competitive field, obviously, and it's a very small field because most composers know one another, either from their academic studies or from crossing paths at seminars. I'm sure that if a few of them aren't already friends, they'll leave as friends as well. I know certainly that's the case with myself in the conducting profession, that it is a very solitary field. There's only one of us in front of an orchestra at any given time, but I know all of my colleagues, and even though I'm competing with them in some respect for guest conducting engagements or positions, that we are all very supportive of one another. I imagine that's true with the composers as well, and hopefully each one of them, I'm confident that each one of them will leave Indianapolis with a great deal of gratitude for this opportunity, and are very grateful that to be able to be chosen for this is an honor in and of itself.
Do they offer feedback to each other, or is that permitted as part of this thing?
I've absolutely seen that happen, and it's been really some of the best feedback as well from somebody who'll say, I love what you did here. It was an amazing effect. I'm going to use that in one of my pieces. Composers steal from each other. They always have, the time.
Yeah, no. No, when artists do that, it's not called theft. It's homage.
Exactly. Yeah. There you are.
Right. Yes.
So
it's
way
it's
of
a different.
That.
It's an entirely form of being complimented.
Flattery, yes.
Yeah.
We've gotten an email from a listener named Susan. If you'd like to reach out to us via email, you can find us at nolimits@wfyi.org. the email says, Susan says in the email, Elaine mentioned four centuries of music will be performed. What are some of the different concerts next season that ICO will present? I lapsed back on reflex to one of my earlier jobs at the Indiana Civil Liberties Union and started to go ICLU. Sorry.
Matthew, you know, the programming of the series is the responsibility of the music director, and Matthew has done a fabulous job. This is not a cop out. I'm going to turn it over to Matthew to kind of cover the variety. We've got living composers, we've got variety of continents covered.
And we open our official opening night is October 8th with Christopher O'Reilly, who many of your listeners will recognize from The Top, which is a very popular, very famous radio show that promotes exceptional young, talented classical musicians. But he's also a brilliant pianist who performs internationally, and he's here with us on October 8th to perform Beethoven's Second Piano Concerto. A month later, changing gears completely from Beethoven is a concert of the Roaring Twenties, because in the 20s, as I mentioned earlier, composers were combining popular music. So if you're interested in the sounds of George Gershwin, Kurt Weill, who wrote from the Three Penny Opera, Mack the Knife, mm-hmm. you know, this is still classical music, as we refer to. The oldest piece on our season is our traditional Messiah, which has been in the repertoire since it was penned several hundred years ago. I mentioned a cello tango concerto. A very exciting concert for us is in March, City Lights, Charlie Chaplin's City Lights, when universally recognized as one of the finest movies ever made. We're performing the film score live while we show the film overhead on a large screen at the Schrott. Gary Carr, who's an internationally renowned double bassist, is performing with us in April. And we have a program of adaptation and adoration, because what higher compliment can one composer pay to another than to take their music and to use it and adapt it? So music from Handel all the way to a cello concerto that was written just a year ago that spans over 300 years right there.
How do you, when you're deciding what a concert will be, how do you decide what pieces you want to use? I mean, does it start for you with a theme, or take me through that process real quick?
Of course. I mean, it usually happens on a long 3-mile run for me is when I'll get the lucid moments of inspiration. And I've come up with dozens of programs that I still haven't used yet. But it can start in different ways, from a guest artist, for example, Christopher O'Reilly, for example. I mean, we knew we had him for our opening night. The program started with his piece because it's what he offered. And it can build around that. But I always try to keep some kind of connective theme, whether it's an outright theme or a theme that's built more internally and maybe is less exposed. But I think it is important that pieces fit together much like a great meal would. Mm-hmm. I love pizza and I love sushi, but I don't want to eat pizza and sushi
at the same time.
Yeah. And music works that way too. Some pieces just don't fit together. In fact, as one of our lessons in a conducting course over 20 years ago, they showed us the worst program ever. I don't know if it's the worst, but it was George Gershwin's F major piano concerto, and on the second half was Mahler's Symphony No. 6. It was just, I mean, it was just an example of how some pieces just don't really fit well in the course of an evening. You want the audience to walk away remembering particular moments, maybe a particular piece, maybe a particular melody, and you want that to connect in a very lucid and refreshing way, not something that's overly complicated or doesn't feel right. So it is a very, very difficult process to put programs together.
And I'm going to pose this question to both of you. What do you hope with Earshot that the audience will walk away with? Because it is a different kind of experience in that it normally a performance, and particularly a classical music performance, is a finished product. I mean, there is something out there, and you're presenting the piece in kind of a completed form. Here there is a sense, and part of the appeal, I would think, of the event is that you're pulling the curtain back a little bit and letting people see how the art is made, as it were. I'll start with Matthew on that one, and then I want to hear Elaine's thoughts as well.
I think you summed it up perfectly. We want to pull back that curtain. It's an opening a window to the creative process of music making. And many of our audience members often wonder, and they're shocked when they attend a rehearsal to see what actually goes on. And one concert can take four rehearsals, easily four rehearsals to put together. And that's very much the case with this process, too. You'll see a little bit of rehearsing, but you'll also see a concert. You'll see the work that the musicians put into this process, and you know how a composer's mind works as well. You know, how they hear things, how they put it on paper, because we're still using a notation system that's hundreds of years old. That hasn't changed. Composers are finding new ways to notate the music that they hear and to make possible. The audience gets a little look into that process.
Elaine.
Okay, so. Well, I don't want to repeat what's already been said, because I think a window on the creative process is exciting, as I mentioned before. But for me, from my very first experience with the chamber orchestra, which goes back something like 20 years, this orchestra has always been a source of musical discovery for me. And I really hope that Earshot will enhance this process of discovery and pique curiosity. I think the idea of hearing, I mean, it's very common. You hear book reviews, you get out the, you know, the newspaper and you look at the bestseller list and you see what's new. And this doesn't happen in the musical world. Maybe a little bit in the pop genre it does, but it's not happening in the classical world or in the art music world. And so I think the whole process of curiosity satiated and discovery, it will be fabulous for any listener that comes to Earshot, and that's from any of our just our adult patrons to any of the students on Butler's campus and the other campuses around town. We're sending information about the Earshot readings and the workshops that will precede them on Friday afternoon to music schools all, you know, within a 60 to 100-mile radius, so that music students from all around, from Bloomington, Terre Haute, DePauw, whatever, can participate in all that there is to be experienced.
What, Matthew, is the greatest challenge for the musicians to prepare for something like this? And I'm trying to think, as we've been talking about this, I remember in earlier life witnessing sort of an early rehearsal when I think one of the dancers, and I cannot remember her name, for the New York City Ballet came to perform here with, I think it was the Indianapolis Symphony Orchestra, and just watching the complex negotiations between the dancer and the musicians about how quickly a certain section would be played, in part because how quickly that section would be played would determine how long the dancer had to stay on point. And that gave me a window into, oh, wow.
It's more complicated.
That it really is a difficult and tricky thing to do. So what are the challenges associated? Because it sounds like you've got five very different composers here who have different approaches. Presumably, you know, no single musician is equally adept at every form of expression. What are the real challenges here?
Well, that's the challenge there, is that all five of these composers use a different musical language. It's their different musical voices, and a few of the composers have incorporated jazz elements into their music. So for the musicians, all five of these pieces are brand new. They've never played it before. They've never seen it before. So their preparation time, they'll have to obviously work many hours at home before they show up for the rehearsal for this. On a typical concert, I have programmed new music in our season, but that's always paired with a more familiar work that the musicians have probably played before, by Beethoven or Schubert. In this case, this is an entire program of new music to them, not only newly penned, but unfamiliar to their fingers. They have not internalized it. So it'll take that work, you know, the preparation ahead of time, and many hours for them to get everything in their fingers so that we can put it together in a relatively short period of time. Now, thankfully, unlike opera or ballet, we don't have to coordinate with other arts partners in this, that I can establish the tempos that the composer wants without fear of a singer coming in late or a ballerina missing a cue. So thankfully, it's just all about the music for us. But it is challenging music, but also a very rewarding process.
Or in the opera singer's case, please get through this section before I pass out.
Before I lose
consciousness here because I've run out of air.
Matthew brings up a great point, though, about the excellence and the skill of the musicians in the Indianapolis Chamber Orchestra. This is a very fine orchestra. And, of course, you know, somebody could say I'm paid to say that. But I was an ICO patron long before I ever took this job. And that was one of the reasons why that's what kept me coming back is the recognition of the excellence that's on that stage. And it blows my mind that they will be able to put this together in basically only, I mean, they will have to come prepared because they're only going to have two times together. There's two, a rehearsal and a performance of the readings. That's it.
We've gotten a question from a listener. It says, because he, presumably you, Matthew, has some experience with Earshot, can the maestro talk about the enduring benefits for the participants and winners?
Absolutely. And first and foremost, it's the opportunity to have their piece played by a professional orchestra. I may have mentioned earlier that three of these works have been played before by university orchestras or pickup orchestras, but this is an opportunity for them to have professional music, lay their hands on their music to get a professional quality recording at the end of this. And, you know, we can't say enough about the resume value alone. To have been selected for Earshot, to be here involved in this process is really a boon for their development, professionally and artistically as well. So I've not met a composer who's completed one of these readings who's walked away disappointed. We've gotten everything from the feedback from musicians, the mentor composers, even audiences, because the after the concert, we're all in the lobby afterwards to get that kind of feedback here. So for a young composer, it's just very similar to young conductors. Your instrument is the orchestra, and you can't go to a practice room and practice that. You have to be in front of the orchestra. In the case of the composers, you have to have your piece realized by an orchestra, not a computer program that plays back MIDI style everything that you wrote. You need to hear what it sounds like, and you need to know how it was written for the musicians so they can provide that feedback.
And I'm assuming, based on what Elaine was saying, too, that there are benefits just for students of music who want to come to this and see what the process is like.
Absolutely. This is like a giant masterclass.
Yeah.
Really. Not just for these five participating composers, but for any student who wants to observe the process, who might be aspiring as a composer or even aspiring as a conductor, to see the musicians at work. So there will be workshops on Friday afternoon that are open. And they will cover all kinds of topics from publishing your music using current publishing software to copyright issues or concerns, considerations. I'm trying to just think off the top of my head. There were three topics, and I've only come up with two of them. But
one of the discussions is actually what we've been talking about this whole interview, mm-hmm. the state of classical music in the 21st century. Jesse Rosen, the president of the League of American Orchestras, will be here leading that panel discussion about what music looks like, classical music in the 21st century.
Well, we've got just a little bit of time left, and given that we've talked about this and whetted people's appetites, Elaine, could you give them information if they want to reserve seats to Earshot, how they go about doing that again?
Certainly. If you would like to reserve a seat for Earshot on Friday, September 23rd at 7 p.m. at the Schrott Center for the Arts, please call the Indianapolis Chamber Orchestra office, 317-940-9607.
Go ahead and give it to him again.
317-940-9607. If you'd like to know more about our season, visit our website, icomusic.org.
And that is an appropriate last word. I'd like to thank my guests, Elaine Eckhart and Maestro Matthew Kramer of the Indianapolis Chamber Orchestra. I am John Kroll. You've been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Executive producer, Michelle Johnson. Producer, Shannon Cagle. Interactive Media Coordinator, Scott McAllister. Technical Producers, Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood. And Board Engineer, Joe Hatcher. Abby Terzini screens our calls. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.